UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
Howdy, dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls?
Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all doing well. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Tonight we meet Drew in South Carolina, and Drew will be sharing with us a couple of his UFO encounters, in particular an object that he witnessed in Albany, Georgia in 1996, of something that resembled a tuning fork with an array of lights. Drew up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Drew, and welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Nick?
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from South Carolina.
That's correct.
Okay, Drew, you're going to be sharing some of your experiences with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
Sure. So, to kind of lay the groundwork, there's an experience that I've remembered my entire life so vividly to where it's like I can close my eyes even right now and I can still see this image. And it's been with me since I was a young kid, and it's influenced me in, you know, great ways. I mean, my curiosity, you know, as far as technology, science, our existence, what that might mean, philosophy, I mean, all the above just went off the charts at a very young age because, well, I can't say exclusively because of this, but very much impacted by this event. And it's very simple. I mean, I was around the age, well, I would have been 9 at this time. We were living in Albany, Georgia. And I was awoken to a feeling that, you know, it's really hard to, at that age, the best description I could give it is it felt like a bunch of ants were crawling all over me. You know, very tingling feeling, which I now, as an adult, can recognize to be static electricity. But, I woke up and me and my younger brother, we had a bedroom and we had our beds bunked, sort of like stepbrothers, so we could have more room for activities. So I slept on the top bunk and he slept on the bottom, and our bunk beds were right up against a window. So when I felt this feeling, I remember – waking up and kind of looking out the window, and I sent you a drawing of, you know, what I saw when I looked out the window, but I saw what I could best describe as a tuning fork shaped craft. Didn't seem like it was landed. It seemed to be floating, but not hovering or moving in any kind of erratic way, almost perfectly still. But it had very unique lights all over it. If you look at the drawing, some of the set of lights I could best depict as being white, but they weren't really white. A lot of the other guests that you've had on, when they describe it, I totally get what they're saying, because the light seems to be a very pure, almost have a tinge of blue hue to it. You know, often a similar type of light in movies is depicted as being angelic in some sense. But it also had a row of lights on it that, you know, I best kind of depicted as being portholish, but maybe that's not what they were. They seemed to cast their light in a way that was unlike anything I'd seen at the time. And the lights seemed to be shifting in color. My brain at the time, I was 9 years old, this happened in 1996, at the time likened it to the famous toy Simon Says. But the lights weren't, you know, on the Simon Says toy, the lights are, you know, red is always red. The lights on the ship seemed to be able to change whatever color the ship wanted them to be. And it didn't seem to be changing in any noticeable pattern that I could, you know, make out at that age. So I'm in the bed, I lean up, I'm looking out the blinds, and I see this. And my memory kind of goes out. And then it's the next day. You know, it's crazy because I remember this so vividly. And it's strange because I've always, you know, I've always had a pretty good memory. This will kind of come into play later. But, you know, I feel like on the cartoon in Family Guy, you know, Stewie makes jokes about discovering his inner voice or his inner monologue early. That I laughed so hard when I saw that on the cartoon, because I feel like that's something that I've always kind of had. I've always had this inner conversation going on in my head at a very young age. I've always been competitive. I have an older brother who's 6.5 years older than me. So, you know, when you have that older brother, you're constantly chasing him and trying to be his peer and trying to, you know, do the things he's doing. And because of which, you know, I can remember being, you know, and there's pictures of me being 2 or 3 dressing up like I was going to school, because that's what I saw my older brother doing. Adults, when I was really young, used to spell things around me that they didn't want, you know, kids to know. And that used to really tick me off. So we had these little mini records because my mom is a teacher. And each record was for a different letter of the alphabet. And it came like a little mini record player. And when I was a young kid, I mean, this is before I even started kindergarten, I just started listening to those records over and over. And I eventually, you know, taught myself how to read. I started with my name and how to, you know, sound that out, and went on and on, and it evolved to where I knew how to read. Now, I couldn't read novels, but I could read and understand spelling well enough that that trick that adults used to use on me didn't work anymore. And I never told anybody about it. So whenever I was going to school, and I kind of segue into this, I may jump around, but it's interesting because when I reflect back on these memories through life, I've kind of questioned, you try to rationalize to yourself, like, what is it that I really saw? Because it's, I can remember this part so vividly and distinctly and specifically. But when you try to remember what happened after that, there's a block. You know, it's almost like a physical pain you feel at a specific location in your brain. And that's weird, because that's a sensation that I don't normally run into when trying to access any other memory I have in my brain. In fact, to get back to this recount, I distinctly remember the following day after this. You know, I don't remember what I did prior to this event or what was going on, but I remember the next day because, you know, this was in my mind and I was trying to rationalize it, and I had to go to school, and, you know, I was kind of aloof that day because I was trying to rationalize it. It wasn't, terrifying or anything like that. I was just trying to make sense of what I'd seen. Went to after school care and then went to baseball practice. And I distinctly remember that because I was kind of out of it. And I was kind of one of the more vocal people on the team. My dad actually coached our team. And I distinctly remember on the ride home from the YMCA field, I remember exactly where we are. And it's so crazy. I actually went on Google Earth and when I went and looked at this exact location, I mean, it looked exactly how it looks in my memory. But I remember exactly where we were driving on the way home when I kind of nonchalantly mentioned it to my father. And I asked him, I was like, you know, have you ever seen something, in the sky that, I don't know, it kind of looked like, I could, you know, 9 years old, you don't have that great of descriptive vocabulary, but I watched a lot of TV cartoons, so I likened the shape of it to a tuning fork. You know, I'd seen that on Looney Tunes. And I said, it looked like a tuning fork, you know, from Looney Tunes, or, you know, how they have magnets on there, but it didn't have the handle on it. I was like, hey, you know, or maybe the bottom rigging on like a helicopter, but nothing on top of it. You know, I'm like, have you ever seen anything like that with lights on it? And he's like, you know, my dad's like every other dad in the 90s. He's, you know, listens to the story. He's driving, jamming to, you know, he's big into jazz and Sade. We were probably listening to that. And, you know, he kind of listened to the story and kind of shrugged it off. I was like, no, maybe you're dreaming or something, you know. And I kind of took that answer and was like, okay, well, if he's not worried about it, I'm not worried. I'm not afraid. I know I wasn't dreaming. I've never had a dream that vivid, you know. In fact, I'm not really one to dream. You know, I've often tell people, like, I don't have dreams. I just go to sleep and my mind rests and I wake up. So to have a dream that vivid would be so out of character and out of place. It'd just be strange to me to be able to feel and touch and sense. Yeah. So that account took place when I was a kid, and throughout my childhood, you know, I was constantly trying to investigate what could have made sense of it. And I distinctly remember when it happened, because the way my memory works, like, I can remember how things make me feel, you know. And that's what I feel like is interesting about this, is even if, you know, some parts of this memory are being blocked, they weren't able to overwrite how it made you feel, that, you know, what that sense seems to override whatever effect or technology they may have to, you know, you often hear people saying about lost time or and whatnot, whatever effect that they're able to produce that makes this happen is not able to totally block out the memory. And I think there's something interesting about that. You know, the propulsion obviously is going to be interesting to me. I remember, you know, doing research and running across talks from Bob Lazar. He mentioned the, you know, gravity well. And I said to myself, well, that could work, because I, you know, in my own thoughts, even as a kid, I said, and I would always argue with science teachers and talk to, you know, they always said, oh, how could you traverse space? And even if you moved at the speed of light, you'd be restricted. And I'd say, well, what if, you know, we've been able to observe certain things in space that can move faster than light, the expansion of space itself. So, you know, even before I heard Bob Lazar, I said, what if you could, in a sense, coat something in space itself and use space as some sort of like a lubricant, or, you know, to reduce whatever drag hindered you from going beyond the speed of light. So when I heard his talk, that definitely sparked something to me. But I always got the feeling, based on my own experience, that whatever I saw was more tied, you know, to electromagnetism. You know, people often mention things making no sound. I feel like I distinctly remember a sound of something that sounded similar to like a power transformer. We had a transformer outside our home, but you typically wouldn't be able to hear that from our bedroom where we slept. You know, I could hear that whenever we were standing outside waiting on the bus. So, but I remember the sound and tone and vibration, you know, feeling more likened to something like that. And I think that's why I was always curious just about electricity in general. So, you know, that led me down a path of, you know, investigating a lot of scientific type things to try to rationalize this. I watched and consumed all, you know, any movie that talked about the subject And the further I kind of got away from this event, the more I, you know, you kind of grow into adolescence and adulthood and you kind of file it away. And in my mind, memories are kind of like, you know, stored away in like rooms of a big mansion. And this was like, you know, a side attic that you kind of stuff some stuff away that you don't think about, you know, all the time per se. You know, it, you know, it's led you on a path to where you're very curious about different subjects. But this specific incident, I kind of, you know, more and more tried to convince myself like, well, I don't know about it. Well, as, you know, I got older and graduated high school and, you know, segueing all the way up to 2007, there was another incident, and this just came out of nowhere. And I had one of my friends with me there to witness it, which just gave me that extra confirmation, like, okay, I knew it. And we were, you know, we were going downtown, and I went to the house to pick them up because, you know, they had parents that were, you know, a little more or less strict, and they, in order for them to get out the house, you know, they wanted to see that they were going out with a friendly kind of trusted face. And we, you know, we ran track together, so I could kind of go and vouch for them. So went, picked them up, we're in the car, and we're getting ready to get on the highway. And here in Columbia, it's Highway I-20. And we noticed this white light. I kind of looked at it out of my peripheral and noticed it a little bit earlier. But, you know, when I ride, and especially when we're getting ready to go out, hang out downtown, you know, we're usually listening to music. So I just kind of looked at it, but was paying attention to the road and just making sure, you know, we got downtown and listening to the music. But then I noticed that the light seemed to be growing in size, and the way it casted light just struck a nerve in me, a memory in me that was so familiar, but in a sense I had kind of like forgotten it, or just kind of, you know, like I said, stashed it away in that another room and hadn't been in there in a while. And the light, you know, it grew. And next thing you know, it's about the size of, you know, if you were holding out a pea in front of you, but a very bright bluish white light. Well, as we're coming onto the interstate, I go to utter and I say, yo, what the heck? And before I could finish my sentence, the light seemed to disperse something that lit up the sky like the brightest camera flash you've ever seen. Maybe one or two of them, actually. And the light itself took off at what I could only estimate near the speed of light. It didn't leave a streak like you would see in Star Wars, you know, when they jump to light speed and it leaves a light streak. You could still see a pinpoint taking off, but the rate of speed would be similar to, you know, taking the cursor on your mouse, you know, on your computer screen and just wiping it across the screen that fast. But that being the entire scope of the horizon. And when we saw it, I just said, yo, what was, and my friend looks at me, he's like, I don't want to talk about it. I looked, I'm like, what do you mean? You know, I'm like, you know me, I'm that UFO guy. A lot of my closest friends at that point knew that if any of us was more or less across the fence and believing in the existence of UFOs, and UFOs not necessarily meaning alien. I mean, more than likely I would say that. But, you know, the things that I could firmly attest to is seeing technology that farly exceeded anything that was known, widely known to man. Let's put it like that. And I'm looking and I'm like, you don't want to talk about it. But something in me told me is like, just let it go. You know, leave it alone. So I don't even, you know, the crazy thing is I don't remember what else we did that night. All I could do was think about what it is we saw. And to this day, you know, I could call them up and they still remember this. You know, they're a lot more welcome to the subject now. In that moment, it was kind of like, I think, just a shutdown. It was a shock. We're both grew up very religious, but they, you know, I think this kind of just shocked their whole paradigm. And it took them some time to be able to see that, like me, I mean, you know, this isn't something that I think should change anybody's views on whether or not there's a God or anything like that. I mean, I took this as concrete evidence of an existence of something well beyond the mundane, you know, well beyond what we've been instructed to believe. And that, to me, was more evidence that there is some higher being than there would be that there isn't. So perhaps this may have been evidence of a higher being. I mean, that this sighting, you know, it was so, because it was that much more recent, and because I had the experience as a kid, I feel like my mind retained this image just so, so vividly. And I was able to apply a more analytical mind and brain to it. And I remember seeing the video of the UFO over Jerusalem, and I believe that came out maybe in 2011. And I remember when I saw that, I said that, I sent the link directly to my friend, and we both said, yo, that's exact. I know when you Google it, people want to say, somebody wrote some article trying to insist that it's a hoax. But I'm telling you, that thing, what we saw, looked exactly like that. And that, you know, it kind of expanded my mind even more. And I said, you know, what is the significance of this UFO going and parking over the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem? You know, that, to me, I don't know what the significance of that was, but having seen something, witnessed something so like that with my very own eyes, it was not hard for me to believe that that was actually a real sighting. And the multiple vantage points, you know, videos that were able to surface of that, it just, you know, if it wasn't, then whoever made the video had to have seen something themselves. You know, I've looked at movies over the years of my lifetime, and I can firmly look at some of them and say, you know, that's strange that these people got that so right when they did. And, you know, that brings up another point. You know, what is that? Intentional? Is that just by coincidence? What is the human imagination? I mean, do we really know, where are these ideas really coming from? Are we just piecing them together, or is it a function of something all more greater? So those are the two accounts that I've actually witnessed. And in seeing that in 2007, it seemingly just confirmed, you know, it's like I believed myself this entire time, but you have your doubts. But when you see it again as like an adult, you know, now you're an adult, you have a more analyzing, irrational mind, you say to yourself, yeah, I can trust that memory, that happened, that there's some significance to this. I even thought it was interesting that I would see this almost 10 years or so from my previous sighting. You know, I don't know if there's any significance to that, but it seemed as though it was meant for us to see. It seemed as though, I didn't make the connection at the time, but in hearing so many accounts on your show, it seemed as though it decided to take off the second that I was about to audibly acknowledge it. It just seemed like there was a lot of, it didn't seem to be coincidence. I'm thankful for it, to be honest with you. I'm glad I haven't had any of these experiences, or maybe I have and I can't remember, but these experiences that folks have had that terrify them, I mean, to me, it's been absolutely fascinating to, you know, inquire and wonder. And, you know, I listen to other people's accounts, and, you know, you try to piece together the puzzle and try to make sense of what, you know, what actually is at play. You know, having witnessed it, and it isn't far for me to make the leap that, okay, perhaps we are being visited by entities, intelligent entities that aren't human. I look at it, I hear different things, you know, I sit and I wonder, I say, you know, what interest could these entities have in human beings? The power I've been able to witness, the technology, I don't think that there's a resource on planet Earth other than just the sheer data that we produce, you know, being interested in how we think and how we react and how we rationalize. I don't know what other thing our planet could have that they could be interested in if they were truly extraterrestrial. Now, if they're, you know, how some people have proposed, maybe a race that, you know, maybe inner Earth or hidden race here on the planet, that's another story. Yeah, I feel like they're probably higher in morality to be able to have such technology and not have destroyed themselves. You know, when I look at this now, I know people often always talk about propulsion. I'm curious as heck, how the hell, excuse my French, but how the heck do you navigate the cosmos and know where you're going, you know, and make it back home. I think that whatever technology that allows them to do that, it would be absolutely phenomenal. You know, you look at the accounts of Roswell, and if you kind of take all that as fact, you say to yourself, you know, how would a race with technology like that actually be brought down unless it was intentional? You know, I don't know that lightning would be enough to bring down a craft that clearly displayed mastery of electromagnetism itself. You know, perhaps in crashing that craft, it was completely intentional to seed us with, you know, technology to then, you know, basically giving us a puzzle to work on, to kind of unlock some feature in our own minds, you know, and maybe the bodies that were recovered, you know, I've often theorized in my own mind, maybe they don't even have a fear of death. You know, maybe they can transfer consciousness from body to body at will. Or, you know, you often hear about these things being referred to as like androids. You know, maybe they don't have to go across the universe. They can just upload themselves into this once the ship makes it there, so they can stay home and make it, you know, with their families. Or what? I'd be curious. Along that line of thought, I'd be curious to know what kind of culture they have. Do they have art? Do they have, you know, what do they do with their spare time? The way, you know, if you were to correlate it to ours and how so much of our time and energy and effort is spent on entertainment. Do they have the same desire to be entertained? You know, the questions just could go on and on. But I think those are, you know, decent questions to ask, and maybe good and responsible questions to ask based on where we're at now. I think in 2022, we got to get beyond the bottleneck of, do these things exist? You know, there's so much footage out there available for, you know, anybody to look at, that I'm of the belief that, you know, people don't really necessarily need to be convinced as much as they just need confirmation. You know, some of the more intricate details of people's accounts help bring a little bit more focus to something that otherwise was, you know, had a lot of blur on it. Just being able to have common data points and bounce ideas off of people, I think it's going to be what takes us forward. You know, I don't think we need, and I didn't necessarily mean to get all this, you know, metaphysical, but as a species, I don't think we need some nemesis in order to ascend or want to evolve ourselves. You know, I think maybe these interactions are meant to inspire us to, you know, go beyond the moon, and not only that, literally, but, you know, take better care of the things that are issues that are well within our grasp, but, you know, we're just, humanity hasn't been properly incentivized to want to tackle. You know, that's just my thought. You know, when I look at, I've always asked myself, you know, when I look at these beings and this technology, I said, what is the definition of power? You know, what is real power once you get to this point? And it's, in my mind, I've kind of reduced it down to the ability to predict or influence the future. And, you know, if you have real power, I don't think I think a lot of the evils that may exist are from our own insecurities and perhaps in trying to provide us with this definition of power, you know, better able for us to predict the events that may occur in our own future, and better equipped us to be able to influence those futures. Maybe they're trying to help get rid of some of those insecurities to help, you know, get us to the point where we could be more moral. So,
The The 40th Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens. Or if you're a producer devoted to demonology with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
Well, here's one interesting thing about that incident is for years, since I first got the internet, been looking online to see if I could find any kind of reports about it. And I didn't see anything. And maybe 6 months to a year ago, I saw, you know, there's a website, I guess, where they were able to data mine and pull some of the MUFON reports off. But I saw a guy who filed a report in Albany, Georgia, on May the 26th of 1996. In his account, he's ex-military. I'll send you over his report, man, but his account was just so, I don't want to say gratifying, maybe that's the wrong word, but it was so reassuring when I read his account, because it, from his perspective, it may have appeared to be bar or cigar shaped, but the way he, you know, the craft I drew could have appeared that way depending on what, you know, your vantage point, but the way he described the lights, and I believe even the number of lights that he mentioned was to a T. You know, he mentioned a whitish light on both ends of the cigar, and he mentioned the, you know, changing color lights, pulsating, changing, randomly changing color lights in between. And that was a feature, you know, that I kind of kept to myself. I told my brother, or, you know, that I'd never publicly publicized it or made a report anywhere. So to read his report and just get that confirmation, because that's such a specific detail, you know, just it really made me again have that confidence and be able to say, you know, maybe I do need to reach out to you or somebody and make a report so somebody else might hear something I'm saying and get the same confidence. And here's another interesting thought. I meant to mention this when I was talking about the craft, but in the drawing, I kind of draw the lights, those colored lights, kind of in a projecting pattern. When I drew it like that, that's just how I remembered it in my mind. And I remember the lights having a weird effect, but I never put two and two together until more recently. I actually have, you know, one of the more advanced HD laser projectors. I have a hunch, but I feel like that technology may be derived from something that, you know, if they happen to be able to reverse engineer any of these craft from something like that on the craft, it really got me wondering and saying, like, perhaps these lights aren't meant as marker lights, or, you know, perhaps it's intrinsic to the propulsion itself, or perhaps, you know, those lights, the way they change color, maybe that's, you know, providing image projection or cloaking feature. So, you know, just that's a thought I had. Maybe I wanted to put it out there. Maybe somebody else will say, you know, maybe that is what's going on with those. Because the lights, you know, as a kid, it's just, you know, it's just changing colors. I just figured maybe they just wanted their ships to look cool, like we might want, you know, stuff to look cool. But going back and just reassessing the image and the effect that it had, yeah, I really think it may be something intrinsic to how the craft operates. And I know on one of your other shows, I think the title was They're Out There, a gentleman mentioned seeing a craft very similar to what I described. I think he kind of described it as the Millennium Falcon with extended forks on it. His description was very similar. And he mentioned, I didn't draw it on the image, but he mentioned the haze kind of surrounding the craft, which is another kind of distinct feature that I remember seeing And I remember that the way that the lights kind of reacted on the haze just seemed to produce colors that, you know, I couldn't even, you know, you don't really have words to describe. And I've heard a lot of guests say that as well. And as I grew in age, you know, I've never been to Alaska, but when I see videos of their Aurora Borealis, I feel like that's very similar. That effect was very similar to the haze that I saw on the ship, which, you know, I researched what causes their Aurora Borealis, and it's, you know, the electromagnetic field of the Earth. So, you know, I think there's something to that, especially when, you know, when I hear people have stories and they mention distinct details like that, to me, it's very telling that, you know, they definitely saw what it is that they saw. You know, I mentioned in the email, too, I kind of forgot about this, too, but I mentioned that the gifted program that I was a member of. And the reason I did is because in my mind, where I stored these memories, these childhood memories of this UFO sighting, I also had these memories of going to this program, which was a gifted program. To join the program, you know, you had to take a test or something, some sort of standardized test. The school, elementary school that I ended up going to as a child, was a magnet school for math and science. So I believe I had to test to get in that, and they took the scores from that, and I became eligible for this gifted program. You know, I distinctly remember going. I remember getting picked up once a week, but I can't, my memories about what we did there are only feelings. And I distinctly remember feeling for the first time in my life, I don't mean to sound egotistical or anything like that by any means, but you know, up to that point, school was just a place to go hang out with friends. It wasn't that challenging to me, but this was the first place I ever felt somewhat intellectually, technologically overwhelmed. I mean, I distinctly remember them giving us some sort of basic circuit. It had some sort of complications in it or something, but we were supposed to solve how to get the circuit to work. And the reason we know it worked, a light bulb would come on. You know, as a kid, I was like, all right, you know, all right, let's get at it. Kind of had us in groups. And I just remember having this eerie feeling there of just always being observed and always being, I don't know, just overwhelmed with the subject matter of the day. Well, you know, when I was, you know, talking to my mom about some of these stories and whatnot, you know, before I would bring up the UFO stuff to her, I kind of mentioned the gifted program, and she was like, you know, I don't remember that. Maybe you just dreamed that or something. I'm like, what? You know, yeah, I'm offended. I'm like, I don't dream stuff up. What are you talking about? So I went off and I had to go look, you know, I told myself I need to go look this up because I know this happened. And my younger brother, he remembered it. And I remembered, you know, distinct conversations with my parents about it because my mom, being an educator, she was so proud because I had, quote unquote, tested in the 99th percentile. And, you know, she was kind of bragging about that. And I didn't even know what a percentile was at that age. But, you know, sounded cool. I remember it making my mom proud. So that memory was kind of burned in my own image. So I go and I do some research, and I was actually able to look the program up online. And when I was reading through it, I was, you know, there it was. It said that in order to get in at kindergarten, you have, you know, students have to test in the 99th percentile and, you know, some sort of, you know, a basic kind of academic test. And then there's another test that you had to. And then on top of that, parents had to submit a nomination form, and it had some basic questions on it. And, you know, the questions on it I found to be very interesting. And I'll send you a copy of this. I don't know that I wanted to put these people in class like that on, but I'll send you an official copy of this so you can read through it yourself. But it just felt interesting to me when I read this parent nomination form and I was reading over the program that my mind would file these memories in the same drawer, if that makes sense, alongside the UFO incident. At the time, I never connected going to this to having anything to do with UFOs or anything. You know, I was just happy to get out of class once a week and, you know, they come pick us up from school. And it was a really nice van. I remember, you know, the van was white, had working AC, which was something, you know, normal after school programs had vans that didn't work. So, you know, it was a new van and weren't many kids on it. But, you know, we'd go to this place and we'd be presented with stuff. A lot of my memories around this place are similar. You know, it's like that same headache that I mentioned earlier when trying to remember aspects of the UFO incident. But I distinctly remember the way I felt. And I went to this place for, you know, I was in this program for 3 years. But I always felt like a cold atmosphere there, a very sterile atmosphere there, almost like you're in a hospital. You know, my mind like likens it to the images of Eleven and Stranger Things. You know, it's like not as creepy. You know, we weren't in nightgowns or anything like that, but we were in rooms and they would, you know, come in with weird stuff for us to solve. That seemed to be very advanced to be introduced, you know, to having kindergartens do this. But when you go to this website, even to this day, I mean, that seems to be the mission state of what they're trying to do. If you go to the overview of it, that's one incident or one activity that I can vividly remember. A lot of those memories do feel the same type block that I have about some of the memory, some of the aspects of the UFO incident, which maybe that's why my brain filed these two memories together. I don't know. But as an adult reading through this questionnaire, looking at the goals of the program, you know, it says, you know, the long range goals of the program are self-actualization for the gifted student and the development of a sense of responsibility to self, school, and society. That's pretty deep to me to have kindergartners doing. I'm not saying it was a bad thing. In fact, I honestly look at it and feel like they may have been absolutely successful because, I mean, I was only in the program for 3 years, but I do tend to think about or feel a sense of responsibility towards society and wanting to make the world a better place and wanting to find solutions to the problems that we face. So maybe the program worked. But I will say, I mean, you know, reading through some of those questions, I find it very interesting because all my life, even watching, you know, in entertainment, I've always, you know, certain storylines and have always resonated with me, you know, and, you know, to have this experience myself that, you know, even my mom can't really recall, which is strange, but to have this experience and to file it, you know, have these two events take place in such close proximity of each other. Yeah, I think it's more than probably a coincidence. And when I heard your guest on, they called me O, and he said, you know, all his life, he's always thought, you know, he's like a ninja or something. I laughed when I heard it, but only because it was so true. I mean, I've never thought that I was better than anybody or anything like that, but I've always felt like I've had these, you know, reflexes, or my mind will analyze things in a way. I mean, to correlate it to video games, you know, I've always excelled at video games. I've always been, hand-eye coordination has always been a tool that I've been able to rely on in many different environments. And to see that question on this questionnaire, it's like you're asking, you know, part of the requirements to get in this are, well, I don't want to say requirements, but part of what they're interested in is to know if your child has good hand-eye coordination or seeks to dominate others, whatever that means. You know, it's interesting. The questionnaire seems very off. It seems off the beaten path from what I'm used to and have experienced since. You know, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe it's not, but that UFO incident happened a year after I left this program. And the reason I left the program is because my younger brother, the school I went to, you know, everybody had to test to get in. And for some reason, you know, I guess my younger brother didn't test quite high enough to get in, which is crazy to me. I mean, the kid's super smart and has graduated from very distinguished universities since then. But he didn't test in. You know, my younger brother has always been my number one partner in crime, and I wanted to go to school with him. So I asked my mom to get us in a school where we can go to one together. I ended up changing schools and changing districts, and I left this program. So who knows? Maybe my mind knew, maybe there is some link, and maybe it was just them coming to check up on me to see if I've made any progress. I don't know. But it was definitely, the two things definitely happened. I definitely went to this and was able to show my mom, and, you know, she's like, oh yeah, I don't know why I couldn't remember that. My dad remembered it, brothers. And I also, this event that happened when I was a kid, I mean, it truly happened. And luckily I told my younger brother about it, and, you know, a few other of my friends, and then through life I told other people. So I've been able to always kind of peer review my own story. You know, I can go to these folks and say, you know, do you remember the way I recounted, you know, the story to you? And sometimes, you know, they're able to provide information that I might not have, you know, recalled as well. Sometimes things stick out in their head as being, you know, specific and unique and interesting that I otherwise, you know, I might be more focused on some other aspect of the story. So it's definitely been a benefit, or plus talking about it to good friends and family. And, you know, I often wonder, I mean, maybe that'd be another benefit to finally getting some true disclosure to this matter. Yeah, I've often been curious if maybe some of the things that, you know, the mental illness and afflictions that people deal with could be the result of not being able to rationalize their own truth, in a sense. You know, maybe some of these events occur, and because it's not the event itself, but it's the backlash or oppression or the counter programming they experience from society, that they end up convincing themselves that they're crazy when they're not. So I definitely think there's a huge plus to what you're doing. Get some fresh material out there, get some fresh thoughts on the matter. And, you know, I'm whatever the truth is, I'm interested to know it, you know, whatever. It can't hurt us any more than what we already are. I mean, we're here, we're alive, we're able to talk about it. So I don't think, you know, they always talk about the report where they say society would just crumble if this would remain public. I don't buy that. I think society may actually benefit from such knowledge, because humanity as a whole gain in perspective and realize that some of the things we argue and fight over and think are just really important, not to disrespect anybody's belief, but they're not that important. I've often joked and told people, I was like, I don't think, if you believe in God, I don't think he really is that concerned with some of the things we choose to squabble over around the nature of, you know, his existence. Or I don't know. I mean, I'm no preacher. I don't want to try to lead anybody down any particular path. But I do think that society would definitely benefit from the knowledge, because the knowledge is the truth. And the truth would give us put us in a better position to be able to forecast and influence our own future. So I'm hoping that this is a drop in a much larger bucket of information accruing over time, and hopefully it'll resonate on someone else, and maybe they have similar experiences and they have more to add to these accounts. Whenever you have experiences like this, I feel like your whole life you're trying to fill in the gaps. I've always tried to be able to at least pencil in a line from what I consciously remember and can recall versus me trying to fill in the gaps and make sense of it to myself. So, you know, I'll hold on to those things and, you know, continue to listen and see if any of those things are confirmed from fellow witnesses, fellow observers.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description, or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
Good stuff, Drew.
Yep.
Okay, take us back to 1996 when you saw this object. Now, you saw it from a window. Is that right?
Yep. So I was looking. If you look at the drawing I provided, that's essentially my mind's eye best perspective of me looking out the window. I didn't take the time drawing the blinds. You know, we had those kind of blinds, but they always left them cracked open because, you know, I've always been a night owl, and the best way for me to go to sleep sometimes would be just kind of looking up at the Georgia sky and, you know, falling asleep. So, you know, I was laying in bed, and I remember feeling, you know, at the time I said, felt like ants are crawling on me. And, you know, that's one of those things you kind of wake up and you're like, huh. And, you know, you kind of brushing your arms like, is something crawling on me? But instantly I was mesmerized by what I saw through the blinds, you know, out the window. And I kind of, you know, used my finger to peek through and remember looking out and seeing this craft. And then, you know, after some time, it's hard to say because the image is so firmly kind of burned in my mind, like a photograph, that, you know, it's like a still image. You can, how long does it last? It could last for eternity, you know, as long as, yeah, I could have been looking at it for 10 seconds. I could have been looking at it for an hour. It's hard for me to say, but I do feel like because my mind feels, you know, I felt like I did at some point see the craft in motion, because I feel like the fork section would have been the front of the craft. So maybe, I'm not sure how long I was looking at it, but I feel like I did see it at some point in the sky leaving, going fork first.
Okay. And how far was it off the ground?
I don't feel like it touched the ground because I could see grass. It, you know, it's kind of hard to tell because I use colors to kind of simulate the mood in that that image I drew of looking out the window at night. But there's a grass patch that was between our house and the neighbor's house. And from the perspective, you know, I tried to even go back and estimate like how long this thing would have been. You know, we owned a Suburban back at this time. So I would have estimated it, the fork sections, to be about 2 to 3 lengths of a Suburban. And maybe as wide, you know, wasn't that wide, maybe with the space included, as wide as 2 Suburbans or maybe 3. So not like a super huge craft. I hear some people talk about, I'm happy to have this one as well, because, you know, unlike the one in 2007 where we, you know, we saw a distinct point of light, I was actually able to see a craft, a shape, a vehicle. And it was so unlike anything I'd ever seen, heard, reported. I may have sent it in the email. I mean, I've scoured the internet, and here recently I've seen photographs that seem like they could be similar to what I saw. Very distinct. The lighting on it was very, very, very distinct. And again, I liken it now with this so many more years of experience to our DLP high definition projector bulbs that, you know, if you own a projector and you've ever had to change one of those, it's very interesting the way they work. There's a bulb and there's a color wheel, and I'm not really sure, you know, beyond that, the technology, other than I want to say they use a high voltage going through some type of mercury. Don't quote me on that per se, but I want to say a lot of the bulbs use some type of mercury with high voltage going through it to create such an intense and distinct light. And that light's able to produce, you know, some of the most crisp imagery. And, you know, you go to IMAX theaters, and in doing a quick Wikipedia like backdrop on the history of this bulb technology and looking at the timing of it, I mean, it's very plausible that maybe, you know, this technology was derived from something observed or obtained from one of these type of craft. But I don't think, you know, I feel like it had a purpose. I couldn't tell you what it was, but it definitely had a purpose. It was very, very weird sighting, very distinct. You know, it was so different from everything I read. I just said, I don't know, maybe it's just a one-off. And it wasn't until, you know, I was able to, years later, get all this confirmation that I'm like, this, I felt confident enough to come forward and tell it to somebody else. So to make sure I'm not poisoning the well.
And do you think it's possible that, you know, you had this sighting at the time and you're in this GE program, and do you think there's possibly some connection?
I do. My gut, my intuition, something in me tells me it does. The memories are filed in such a way in my mind and have been since then that now, with the wisdom I have, I do feel like they probably were. It does make me believe that yeah, these two events could have been linked. And I don't know if that means that maybe the vehicle I saw was some sort of secret governmental vehicle, or if, you know, maybe that has something to do with what they're here, you know, what these entities are after, either in proving our ability to think, observing our ability to think, observing our form of logic. I mean, there's just the possibilities, I think, are endless as far as what differences may have occurred in the two different civilizations and why observing them, noting them may have been of interest / entertainment use. Who knows? You hear so many of your guests talk, and I do get the feeling like we're all probably a lot more alike than we are different. I think some of the questions we ask, the intrinsic kind of spiritual questions, are not unique per se to us. So I think there would be value, even if you had superior technology, to observe how another isolated, you know, group of sentient beings that you respected because you understood sentience and consciousness. So you saw them more as brothers. But I think, yeah, I think if I were them, you know, just using my ability to kind of empathize from their position, I would be curious to see how we thought, how we dealt with, you know, maybe the plight of our circumstance, how we found ways to enjoy life, even though we don't have all the technology that they have. I think those things could be both interesting and useful. Maybe that's why I link these two. Maybe they're, you know, you hear about people being, I hear a lot of stories about people being, having contact very young ages and interactions and saying, you know, they've seen screens or been in, received instruction from being. So, yeah, I think it's totally plausible. Other people will look at, you know, I'm sure these programs aren't anything unique. I mean, they're not operating in any clandestine way. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who have been in similar programs across the country and even the world. So maybe, you know, they'll come forward with similar testimony and say, hey, you know, I thought I was the only one, but I did see something weird when I was in this. Or I remember, you know, being in this program and, you know, I don't necessarily believe it was anything nefarious going on, but yeah, I remember being in this, you know, they may come forward saying, I remember being in this program where, you know, we're introduced to advanced things and, you know, asked to see things at a different perspective. And yeah, you know, I think that's totally possible.
Do you remember how many other children were with you in that program?
You know, that's the interesting thing. I don't. I remember the ride, the van. You know, I remember it being a white van. I remember not very many people being on the van when we went, you know, when I got picked up from the school, which was interesting. And, you know, I always felt isolated, which is weird for me. In elementary school, I always, you know, I have a lot of friends that I can remember to this day, their names to this day, you know, kindergarten teachers. I can remember, you know, my kindergarten teacher's name to this day. I can't tell you the name of one kid at this facility, which is very strange to me. Feel like I would have been the type to make at least one buddy. But I always did feel a very heightened sense of competitiveness there too. So maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe we were all thought we were just trying to be the, you know, the best or something. I don't know, but I couldn't tell you. I mean, it wasn't a large number of people. Could have been 5, could have been 15. It wasn't the size of my normal classroom at all. So I would definitely say under 15 kids.
So these vans would pick you up at school and take you to a different location?
Yes. One day, you know, I went and I was kind of sifting through their website. But yeah, they still to this day pick the kids up one day a week. Yeah, that's what they did, you know, back in the 90s. One day a week, they would come pick us up from our normal school and we'd be gone pretty much all day. And the memory of it was so true. And to have it once kind of, I don't want to say questioned, but like, you know, I would have figured my mom would have remembered it. To be able to go in and research it and find it and verify it and print it off and say, boom, you remember now? And, you know, they're like, yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember now. You know, it gives you that confidence to know you can trust your memory. You can trust, you know, what you saw. That's probably one of the hardest things when you see things like this is you say to yourself, am I awake? You know, what does it even mean to be awake? This seems like it should be placed in a dream. So if this is real, then what are dreams? You know, is life one big dream? I mean, you could go real far down the rabbit hole. But I think, you know, to have, to be able to say to yourself, hey, this, I can't explain how this happened, but I can trust my mind and my senses to know that it did, I think is definitely liberating for a lot of people. And maybe that's, you know, a lot of that, that sense of having completed some tasks that a lot of people feel whenever they come and give their testimonial. You know, it's a matter of being able to say this happened and it's there, it's out there. Someone else has got me to this, help through their confirmations, got me to this point, and now I'm doing, you know, I'm doing my part to get somebody else there. I do think provides people with a sense of relief and, you know, like a sense of completion and resolve.
Drew, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experiences for our listeners.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. And I appreciate what you do, man. Keep going.
Good stuff. You enjoy the rest of your day now, Drew, okay? And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too, man. Thanks.
Okay, take care, brother. That's your lot for today. As always, keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Drew for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. Till I see you next week, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.